And you see our sermon text right below it there. I'm preaching just this brief two-part series on evil. This is, once again, my radio message, one of my radio messages that has been formed and shaped into a sermonic form here for you today. And I'm doing this for the remainder of the summer until we begin our series on the Psalms, when we will get back to text upon text. These are all textually based, rooted in Scripture, but once again, in the course of our ministry, we have a distinct radio ministry too that I know many of you don't get a chance to hear. So, Evil Part 2. What does evil government look like? Is it fair to put the two together, evil and government? That's not an oxymoron, is it? How can we spot it? How do we identify it? Few people have done a more thorough job of portraying the classic struggle between good and evil in our generation than George Lucas in Star Wars. Is anything more clearly evil than the Dark Empire ruled by Emperor Palpatine, who is a fallen knight, right? A fallen Jedi knight, Darth Sidious. Don't you like the names? There is a name theology in all myths, are there not? Darth Sidious, what does Sidious sound like? Insidious, right? Darth, with the replacement and transposition of a letter, is death, right? Darth itself means evil. Vader is borrowed right from the Dutch, means father, Darth Vader, evil father, right? Name theology. If all evil governments were as transparently wicked as the Empire, with Death Stars, pale, faceless stormtroopers, devilish creature rulers, one who's half man, half machine, and black plastic, whose every breath sounds as if it comes through a dysfunctional respirator, right? And then that black hooded Emperor Palpatine. Why, it would be no problem to say, wow, that's an evil government. Right? Although Hillary is starting to look more and more like Emperor Palpatine, isn't she, every month? But once we understand that these movies are not only rollicking good tales that entertain and spellbind us, but also they're vivid, tangible pictures of intangible spiritual realities that are spiritually discerned. And we are able to look for the truths, the principles, the realities that apply to our time. Now, I admire Lucas. A little skeptical at first, but over these six episodes, I admire his commitment to study the ancient myths of history, like J.R. Tolkien did, right? In order to create one that fast-forwards into the future of space. He was a close friend of Joseph Campbell. Some of you know him, author of two primary books that we still read today, that is Masks of God and Hero with a Thousand Faces. And that's still worthy of your study to understand ancient myths. Incorporated these things, Lucas did, the things in our DNA regarding good and evil that last week we saw to be natural law, right? What we observed last week is that evil can be crisply biblically defined. Here is your definition again of evil, my working definition of it. That is the active personal state of the soul, consciously set against God and his program, characterized by narcissism, rebellion, and deceit. The active personal state of the soul, consciously set against God and his program, characterized by narcissism, rebellion, and deceit. And we also observe that without the stark contrast of the absolute good personified in the living God of the Bible, no satisfactory definition of evil can be obtained. It's like trying to nail jello to the wall without that contrast. All other definitions descend into triviality or relativism. We saw that with Lance Morrow's article from Time, right? Like William James' definition of evil back in the 19th century, evil is a disease. And with the birth of psychiatry, people were confident that they could heal it naturally. Now, Then the 20th century came along, right? Proved psychiatry wrong in that regard. The only true account, if you will, of an active personal state of the soul is the personification of evil, the supernatural creature, the dragon, that ancient serpent who is the devil or Satan, as John calls him in Revelation. Just as all good men take as their model of life and behavior the God of righteousness who made them, so all evil men, those who have given themselves over to serving wickedness, and that is its essence, right? The serving of wickedness, giving themselves over to it. They take as their model of life and behavior the Lord of evil who has seduced them. Good and evil do not contend on a neutral evolutionary stage. Rather, within the grand pageant of redemptive history, a history that the Bible assures us will be found victorious by the eternal God. That's not a dualism that we have here before us, but indeed a victorious eternal God will defeat evil. He will defeat that created being, the devil who deceived them, was thrown into the lake of burning sulfur where the beast and the false prophet had been thrown. They will be tormented day and night forever and ever. But until then, we human beings contend on that stage of redemptive history. In the midst of the fight, good versus evil, righteousness versus wickedness, God versus Lucifer. And before we can properly combat evil without becoming evil ourselves, that's the temptation of so many natural men, to defeat evil by natural means, and thus they become evil themselves. That was Boromir's predicament, right? In the Lord of the Rings, tempted to take that ring and use it to defeat evil, becoming evil himself in the process. Almost. He tread that line, didn't he? He tread that tight rope. Almost succumbing to what Gollum succumbed to. And you see what happens to Gollum. Personification of evil there, right? That pale little weak creature. Well, if we are then not to become evil ourselves, we must have a clear and distinct definition of evil. The active personal state of the soul, consciously set against God and his program, characterized by narcissism, rebellion, and deceit. Remember what I mentioned last week, though, too. I speak here of a deep theological evil in which some men willingly go to hell, consciously practicing evil, exultantly indulging in what they know in their superego, if you will, to be wickedness, knowing full well they serve a Lord at war with God. Evil is also characterized by narcissism. Satan is absorbed in self. His minions are likewise absorbed in self. When God created that sweet angel of light, Lucifer, you were the model of perfection, full of wisdom, perfect in beauty, anointed, a guardian cherub, blameless in all your ways. And like Lucifer, the narcissist cannot put down the mirror, cannot put down the megaphone speaking of himself, cannot tolerate any put down either of what he is or does. We saw that evil is characterized by rebellion. It is the state of the soul. Satan was a rebel against God from the beginning. There was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought back against the dragon and his angels fought. But he was not strong enough, and they lost their place in heaven. The great dragon was hurled down, that ancient serpent called the devil or Satan, who leads the whole world astray. John Milton, in his classic Paradise Lost, as Satan saying those famous words, better to rule in hell than to serve in heaven, right? This was Satan and his fall. Rebellion is a part of the soul. Ever since evil men are opponents of God and his program, this is what I mean by that, rebels against righteousness, rebels against the good, rebels against the salvation offered to lost mankind. Evil is also characterized by lies and deceit. Jesus got it right when he said that the devil is a liar and the father of lies. He lied to our first parents, Adam and Eve, and he persists in lying to his subsequent children, you and me. He promises life and blessing and truth, delivers only death, curse, and lies. He masquerades as an angel of light. Lucifer means light bearer, but brings only spiritual darkness. All Christians, too, as I mentioned last week, owe a debt. Much of what you'll hear unfolded here in terms of group evil. What do evil groups look like? I drew from Dr. Peck's book, M. Scott Peck, People of the Lie, The Hope for Healing Human Evil. Now, he does a just a sterling job of contemporizing what evil looks like. A Christian psychiatrist, is that an oxymoron? Can we have Christian psychiatrists? Yes, we can. And he does an excellent job of unfolding what must still be considered a definitive modern perspective on evil. He's not afraid to look in the human soul and say there is evil there. He's done pioneering work in defining for the modern mind the nature not only of evil in the individual soul, but also that of the group. Especially valuable here. Evil in the group. Groups commit evil. Governments create evil. Is our government evil? Are you afraid to say that? Some of you have had the Jedi mind trick played on you so often now that you're afraid to say our government is evil. How could an entire nation like early 20th century Germany visit on the earth the atrocities of World War II, the Holocaust? How could that small whirling circle of the Soviet Union's Politburo under Stalin perpetrate the evils of famine, war, torture, confined in the gulags, the sheer brutal murder of some 56 million of its own citizens? And how could Army C Company of 1st Battalion under Lieutenant William Calley slaughter defenseless men, women, and children of the village of My Lai in Vietnam in 1968? This latter group, some of you gray hairs remember this, it was a national scandal, wasn't it, back in 68? This latter group action was the purview of then Army psychiatrist M. Scott Peck. This was his first introduction to group evil. In his research, Peck analyzed the psychology of group dynamics, and he came to some startling and revealing conclusions as to how and why an individual who would shrink from committing evil as an individual willingly, enthusiastically commit evil as part of a group. He outlined several factors. Number one, individuals in groups and in governments experience a fragmentation of conscience. They experience a fragmentation of conscience that normally functions in the individual, but that breaks down in group evil. Each individual within the group contributes to the overall purpose of that group with his or her own specialized role. Confiscation of the public's wealth in the IRS, seizure of control of the public's resources in the EPA, propagandistic control of the media by the FCC, and on we could go. Implicit within the very nature of a group task is a diffusion of responsibility amongst all the members, leading to what Peck describes as a fragmentation of conscience. Under such circumstances, I quote Peck now, he says it becomes both possible and easy for the individual to pass the moral buck to some other part of the group. In this way, not only does the individual forsake his conscience, but the conscience of the group as a whole can become so fragmented and diluted as to be non-existent. All right? Unquote from Peck. So then, evil becomes no longer the exception of groups and governments, but the rule, the norm, the expected of every member of the group. So the IRS can target political enemies for audits and status denials without conscience. The ATF can slaughter men, women, and children in a Holocaust at Waco. There's a two-hour special on this that you have to see without conscience. And your military, prediction coming, not so much a prophet am I as seeing what is coming. And of course, your military, John. Talk to John when he gets back. He sees this coming too. Your army will be used against you. As it was in Ferguson, Missouri. Have you been tracking what's been happening in Ferguson, Missouri? Militarized police. One Saturday I was coming up right by the railroad tracks here. From one end of Idaho Falls to another, there was military equipment on trains. Did you see that? Did you see that coming through Idaho Falls? I had no idea where it's going. But it's in country now. What we had in Iraq and Afghanistan, in country, being sold to cities. The fragmentation of conscience is a tactic employed by group and government leaders, too, consciously, for centuries. And it's happening here. It's happening here. Your government and all of its bureaus, agencies, SWAT teams, police, and tactical units are being groomed to plunder, abuse, and tyrannize you with a fragmented conscience. And it's evil. Secondly, narcissism not only characterizes individuals, but groups and governments, agencies as well, issuing in evil defensive actions. One of Peck's most concise and effective insights is that of the narcissism of the evil personality, whether that be individual or collective personality, as in the Soviet Union's Politburo, the Jewish Sanhedrin that crucified Jesus, or President Obama's White House staff. Narcissism is love of, desire for the self. It is pure egotism. The beautiful youth of Greek mythology, Narcissus, who ignores his equally beautiful female consort in order to gaze with love and desire at his own reflection in the surface of a pool, eventually falling into the pool and drowning. Highly emblematic of the emotional and spiritual effect of narcissism, isn't it? The narcissist is unable to see beyond the importance or exaltation of anyone or anything than himself. He must have Greek pillars at his nomination, fainting women at his speeches, fawning sycophants in the media who get a thrill up their leg. All must be sacrificed to his needs and desires. The narcissist cannot put down the mirror, cannot put down the megaphone speaking of himself, and cannot tolerate any put down either of what he is or does. No whiff of criticism, no rejection can be tolerated, especially critical media, which we must monitor and control. Rage, tears, stammering, protests, excuse-making, it's George Bush's fault. Blame-setting, it's still George Bush's fault. And brooding fury characterize the response of the narcissist to criticism. Perhaps the most fearful aspect of the narcissist's personality is his inability for empathy. Peck brings this out as well. The impossibility of putting oneself in another's place to imagine their human experience. The 5 or 6 million people who lost their health insurance because of Obamacare. The narcissist is so self-absorbed that he cannot imagine another feeling, another suffering, another in pleasure, another in pain, happiness, or misery other than himself. All that is real is how they experience these things. All that is real for Idi Amin, Saddam Hussein, for example, two torturers who were said to be incapable of imagining their victims as human beings, feeling pain, while if experiencing a paper cut or burned from a match, they would howl in pain and demand immediate sympathy and treatment. Such narcissism is labeled malignant narcissism, too, and is characteristic of the evil personality. Peck brings this up very well. One of Peck's insights is that government agencies and groups experience this phenomenon as well. In fact, he calls it the most powerful group cohesive force. Peck says, and I quote him, "As the members feel proud of their group, so the group feels proud of itself. A variety of means are used by leaders of groups to foster this pride. Lavish IRS retreats, where ridiculous childish skits portray the agency as heroic in American society, or the sure thing raids by the ATF on innocent families in a religious compound in Waco, Texas, that would burnish the agency's image." Did you realize they thought they had a sure thing? The ATF did when they raided that house in Waco. They got another thing, didn't they? They had several of their members killed. And they had to take the thing down with tanks, a precursor of things to come. The best way is to cement group cohesiveness, Peck says. The best way to cement group cohesiveness is to ferment the group's hatred of an external enemy. This is the hatred of the outgroup. Develop a hatred of the outgroup. Deficiencies within the group, he goes on to say, can be easily and painlessly overlooked by focusing attention on the deficiencies or sins of the outgroup, unquote. Almost any malevolent act can be committed here. Once the enemy has been created, the outgroup identified. So the gas chambers and the ovens were justified by the Nazis for the Jews. The lynch mob was justified by the Ku Klux Klan for the Negro. The SWAT team is justified by Homeland Security for the Tea Party. Enemy creation, outgroup identification, fosters pride in the government agency, bolsters the narcissism of the federal group. Behold your future, America. We already observe a growing, metastasizing cancer of a federal leviathan. No area is growing in America except government, in its power, in its wealth. The federal leviathan, convinced it is God's gift to the American people. Narcissism at its overweening height. your parasitic federal government is increasingly self-absorbed, self-justified, and self-sustained from the host of the body politic of the American people. Thirdly, Peck points out that evil is characterized by the soul of rebellion against God and his program. Last week we observed that wired into the very soul of the first president of man after his creator was the character of the rebel. There was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought back against the dragon and his angels fought back. But he was not strong enough and they lost their place in heaven. Ever since, the so-called light bearer, Lucifer, has led his followers in rebellion against all for which God stands. This includes individuals, but also includes governments. It's not the history of human government, the history of rebellion against God, with a few notable exceptions. The Tower of Babel was the first government works project. Its aim? Come, let us build ourselves a city and tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. In direct rebellion against the creation mandate, was it not? Instead of spreading through the earth and filling it, concentrate, build up, lest we be dispersed, right? Spiritual forces of resistance and rebellion lurk behind every earthly government not consciously committed to biblical principles. Let's look at Daniel chapter 10 for just a minute. We have a perfect example of spiritual forces at work behind the apparent happenings in government. I begin with Daniel as he is praying for Israel. He says, I lifted up while he's praying my eyes and looked, and behold, a man clothed in linen with a belt of fine gold from Uphaz around his waist. His body was like beryl, his face an appearance of lightning, his eyes flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and the sound of his words like the sound of a multitude. And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, for the men who were with me did not see the vision. But a great trembling fell upon them, and they fled to hide themselves. So, in the appearance of this man, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. And he said to me, O Daniel, man greatly loved, understand the words that I speak to you and stand upright, for now I have been sent to you. And when he had spoken these words to me, I stood up trembling. Then he said to me, Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and humbled yourself before your God, your words have been heard and have come because of your words. The prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. But Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I was left there with the kings of Persia, and came to make you understand what is to happen to your people in the latter days, for the vision is for days yet to come. You see behind us, behind the apparent politics of Persia, a struggle in the spiritual realms. And there is a connection, a binding of the two together, as there has been all throughout history. The gods of the nations surrounding Israel, Baal of the Philistines, Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Molech, the abomination of Ammon, all of these had their spiritual realities behind them, which Paul calls rulers, authorities, cosmic powers, spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. No less true of Greece and Rome in Jesus' time, Christians would be put to death for not recognizing the divinity and authority implicit in the claims of the empire. You cannot schizophrenically separate the two. That is, human governments from spiritual realities behind them, lurking behind them. We observe in Revelation the beast and his prophet are the very personification of human government, as the dragon gave to it his power and his throne and great authority. There is no neutral territory in this, all right? You can't go around saving souls and saying that it has nothing to do with your daily life, culture, society, and government. Mikhail Bakunin, the Russian Marxist anarchist who worked for a short time on behalf of the Russian Revolution, declared brazenly, I quote Bakunin now, famous anarchist, still read today, the evil one is the satanic revolt against divine authority. Satan, the eternal rebel, the first free thinker, the emancipator of worlds. Bakunin, the emancipator of worlds, Lucifer, Satan. How Bakunin captures incisively the spirit of modern Marxism and progressivism. Modern progressivism, as embodied in the U.S. today, precisely how Bakunin characterizes it, that the satanic revolt against divine authority. That which God asserts, the progressive denies. That which God declares righteous, the progressive declares wicked. That which God declares just, the progressive declares unjust. God says, you shall have no other gods before me. The progressive declares any god but the God of the Bible will do. God says, you shall not murder. The progressive says, you shall abort your child. God says, you shall not commit adultery. While the progressive says, you shall do it with anyone, anywhere, anytime, with any species, gender, or number of creatures imaginable. God says, you shall not steal. The progressive says, the government may inflate your currency, tax you to the max, borrow against you, your children's, and your children's children's future. God says, you shall not lie to your neighbor, while the progressive says, if you like your health plan, you can keep it, period. If you like your doctor, you can keep him, period. God says, you shall not covet your neighbor's stuff, while the progressive says, your neighbor has more than you. It's not fair. Let me help you get it with government redistribution. Whatever God says, government, when it is evil, will say the opposite in rebellion to God's plan. One of the most blatant exponents of the progressive agenda and its tactics is Saul Alinsky, author of Rules for Radicals. Are you familiar with this book? In this book, he outlines perhaps the most successful path to power ever designed by the evil human mind. In fact, not coincidentally, Rules for Radicals is dedicated, at least in its early editions, to Lucifer. He dedicates his book to Lucifer, the first rebel. Later editions, he dedicates it to his wife, but these early editions... Yeah. Any coincidence there? Alinsky and his lackeys are true to form, and I just isolate on one point in his book. They are true to form of their rebellious father. In order to bring about the Marxist paradise envisioned by the progressive, the community organizer, Alinsky was the first community organizer, if you will. And does that term sound familiar to us? Who else was a community organizer? The community organizer must first, and I quote Alinsky, stir up dissatisfaction and discontent with things the way they are, no matter how good the people may have it. They must be persuaded of their misery, whether it's real or imagined misery. The community organizer must, once again, Alinsky says, agitate to the point of conflict with the powers that be. Is it any wonder when race relations were supposed to be so pacific by the time our president gets into office, but now they're worse than ever, huh? The community organizer, he does what he instinctually what he's trained to do, that is, agitate to the point of conflicts. The community organizer must, and I quote Alinsky again, dramatize injustices, make trouble by stirring up angers, frustrations, and resentments, unquote. This is what the community organizer is supposed to do. Here is the work of Satan the rebel. Although America, by no means perfect, was the land of opportunity for all men with more of everything than any other place on the face of the earth, the progressive, nevertheless, practices evil by deliberately fostering covetousness in the hearts of the people such that they're prepared to rebel against government. Hillary Clinton also wrote her Wellesley thesis paper on Saul Alinsky, which the school will not release. We're very curious to see what that is about, right? She does praise him, though, and extol him. Anyway, when government, number four, when government becomes evil, it is characterized by lies. Need we say more? Jesus was spot on. He unmasked the true father of corrupt government. There's no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, Jesus says, for he's a liar and the father of lies. Peck, Dr. Peck, also discovered this about the nature of evil. I quote Peck. In his book, he says, lying is simultaneously one of the symptoms and one of the causes of evil, one of the blossoms and one of the roots, unquote. Peck also, in line with Scripture, he points out that the greatest antidote to evil is the truth. If Satan is unmasked as mankind's enemy rather than his friend, the game is over. But as it stands, his lies to mankind have been quite successful, especially to those who seek power. Right? Why do evil men gravitate to power or gravitate to government? Because that's where the power is, right? Like Dillinger. That's where the money is. That's why I rob banks. Well, evil men gravitate to government because that's where the power is. I will give you authority over all the kingdoms. Who said that? Can you see why powerful men love that temptation? I will give you authority over all the kingdoms of the world, Satan said to Christ in one of his temptations, and their splendor, for it has been given to me, and I can give it to anyone I want to. So if you worship me, it will all be yours. Such as the blandishments by which Baphomet, Helios, Lucifer has dazzled the souls of so many pharaohs, his priests of Egypt, kings and popes of Europe, presidents, illumined ones of our own day. So thank God that Jesus of Nazareth took the right-hand path. It is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. Not so the initiates of the lie. They succumb to and worship evil for power, knowing good and evil by becoming evil, trusting in a Savior who cannot save. For Satan also lifted Jesus to that 33rd degree of the temple in Jerusalem and said, throw yourself down from here, for it's written, he will command his angels concerning you to guard you carefully. They will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against stone. Implicit in this temptation is that the father of lies will save and deliver those who worship him, both in this life by keeping them hidden. Secrecy is the oxygen of evil. Secrecy is the oxygen. Any society, secret society, that offers you knowledge or salvation in various levels of secrets is by nature evil. Everything in Christianity, the cookies are right out there on the shelf, are they not, to be had. At the heart of the lie is that not only will he not be able to save those bound in the depths of hell at death, but he cannot save himself either. Isaiah 14 reveals this to us. The grave below is all astir to meet you at your coming. It rouses the spirits of the departed to greet you, all those who were leaders in the world. It makes them rise from their thrones, all those who were kings over the nations. Remember the dead spirits in Lord of the Rings that finally redeemed themselves by defeating enemies in battle. This is the state of those souls. You have become weak as we are. You have become like us. All your pomp has been brought down to the grave. Emperor Palpatine, what a weak and pale and frightful visage he becomes. What happens when Darth Vader takes off his helmet and in his dying breath? He's an ugly, twisted, pale shade, is he not? So it is with evil. Satan is the father of lies. And the apples do not rot far from the tree, do they? For his disciples also lie. It is their native language. Ed Klein has written a book called The Amateur. It's about Barack Obama, especially his relationship with Reverend Wright. And Klein, in his book, he gets a chance to interview probably the most frank and disillusioning interview that you'll ever see. In response, Reverend Wright, to what Barack Obama has become. In that interview, Obama says to Reverend Wright, you know what your problem is. You have to tell the truth. And then Wright responds to Obama. He says, that's not a bad problem to have. And that Obama, being a politician, has transformed into an individual who is not necessarily rooted in truth, Wright says in this interview. Politicians don't have to tell the truth, Obama says. Truth is what we say it is. Wright responds to Obama. He says, well, I somehow can't live with that. That's why I could never be a politician. I think that the transformed Barack has become a politician, unquote. Do you still think that a government can or cannot be evil? That there's neutral ground here on this? And that our government is just a chock full of well-meaning people who don't mean to do us harm. One author calls the United States of America the Jedi mind trick nation. You know the Jedi mind trick if you know Star Wars, right? Or Obi-Wan Kenobi when he's stopped by stormtroopers that are looking for the robots. He plays a mind trick on them, and he says, these are not the robots you're looking for, right? That's become a famous line. These are not the robots. And the stormtrooper turns around and says to his compatriots, these are not the robots we're looking for. And he says, you don't need to check their ID. We don't need to check their ID. You can move along now. You can move along now. So often, people fall prey to the propaganda that they hear. They believe what the newspapers say, what the major media says, right? Jedi mind trick nation. Therefore, we have the indignity of the litany of lies insulting our intelligence, visited upon us by our president. If you like your health plan, you can keep it, period. If you like your doctor, you can keep him, period. And has now vindicated, I think, vindicated Congressman Joe Wilson exclaimed at liars at Obama's first State of the Union speech, liar! My White House had no knowledge that the Internal Revenue Service was targeting conservatives before the 2012 elections. We were not coordinating with them, even though the director, Doug Shulman, visited with the White House 161 times, apparently planning an Easter egg contest, right? In the word of Congressman Wilson, liar! The Benghazi attack on our consulate, resulting in the death of four Americans, was the result of an anti-Muslim video, not a terror attack. In the word of Congressman Wilson, liar! America has always had Israel's back. We'll do all that's necessary to prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons. In the word of Congressman Wilson, liar! Time prevents us from cataloging them all. That would take probably another full message. But suffice it to say that when government becomes evil, it is characterized by lies and deceit. Secrecy is the oxygen of evil. Lies are the currency of evil, that in which evildoers buy and sell amongst the deceived. Deceit is the disguise in which evil seems to be other than it is. All of this we see before us in the dragon, the Leviathan, with which we are wrestling. Well then, what are we to do? Believer, how are we to combat such evil? Well, know this. Our battle is first and foremost a spiritual battle. Our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. My brothers and sisters in the libertarian movement are morally neutral. You will become evil before you defeat evil with this course of action. Christ must come first. Our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Use spiritual weapons provided you, the Bible, a life of righteousness and goodness. Be prepared with a gospel of peace on your tongue. In this way, you will be, as that spiritual warrior Paul put it, strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. These weapons have been provided you, courtesy of Christ's labor on the cross. Use them. Favorite saying of the evil practitioners of Marxism is the maxim of Chairman Mao, political power comes out of the barrel of a gun. Know this, Christian, spiritual power comes out of the blood of the cross. It is the only weapon that will defeat evil, and it must come first. Spiritual power comes out of the blood of the cross, not a barrel of a gun. Unless evil is destroyed in the heavenly realms, in spiritual government, it will continue to thrive on the physical plane in human governments. But conversely, unless evil is destroyed in human government on the physical plane, you will preach only a partially applied gospel. Preach Christ. Preach him applied, too. The book of Ephesians is a handbook of this, a handbook of spiritual warfare. Indeed, Paul oscillates between heaven and earth as he talks about the spiritual struggle and the spiritual equipment that we have to fight this war. And until all of this is done, all is fruitless. What is the immeasurable greatness of his power toward us who believe, according to the working of his great might, that he worked in Christ when he raised him from the dead, seated him at his right hand in the heavenly places, Paul says, far above all rule and authority and power and dominion. These were words that were being currently used in Egyptian mysticism and also in Ephesus with Artemis. Artemis the Great, right? And above every name that is named, many, many more names, Paul says, Christ is above them all, not only in this age, but also in the one to come. And he put all things under his feet and gave him as head over all things to the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills all in all. Victory is certain because of these truths, though difficult. But know whose you are. John puts it this way, very simply. The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the works of the devil. And he's doing this. He's done it in your life by calling you to him, converting you to himself. But he's also doing it as he applies that gospel in your culture, in your society, and dare I say, in your governments. Be about using these spiritual weapons to destroy the evil around us in its spiritual power first, and then and only then will you begin to see change in the physical realm, the places of political, social, and cultural power. Well, let us come to that place where we find grace. Then, to help us in our spiritual warfare, then, as we come now then to the bread and wine of the table of the Lord.